Ready? Okay. Sure. So, first of all, just so I know, this won't be used, but just your name and however you want to say who you are.
So my name is Jamie Gaither. I live in Elida, Minnesota. And I am very privileged to be retired and spending most of my time working on trying to fight for our water and our earth.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. So we are sitting, of course, at the proverbial source of a river. But obviously, there's like, we just had a discussion about what the hell does that even mean, and like, what does it mean to cross the headwaters and all this stuff. But it's still interesting why we are here, right? Mm, like, so mm-hmm. there's a kind of arbitrariness to it, but then we're still here. And so this is an interesting question. Like, what is a beginning of a river for you? What does it feel like to be in this space? What was your expectation? Was it met? This just like, what is it like to be at this quote-unquote source, even if you don't accept that definition, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so the headwaters of the Mississippi actually is kind of why I live where I live now, in part. And it's a lot of, just like everything in life, it's a conglomeration of multiple things, but it really goes to being here in the early 2000s and seeing these amazing trees. The trees are very important to me, and yeah, it's kind of a iconic thing to walk the headwaters of the Mississippi. But there's an Indigo Girls song called Ghost that says the Mississippi's mighty, but it starts in Minnesota at a place that you can walk across with five steps down. And I've always loved their music and loved that song in particular. And so when I was at this space, I kind of just fell in love. And we started looking for property in this area and ended up buying a piece of land north of here. And our whole goal was to find some way to live sustainably. And so that kind of headwaters of the Mississippi kind of has been the headwaters of my retirement and this journey that my husband and I have taken for sustainability. And, you know, I really don't know a lot about this project that's happening today, but in talking to Shania, it was like, there's a connection here. And realizing, like, I am living just north of where Enbridge proposes to cross under the Mississippi for the first time with their new Line 3. And she lives, you know, maybe 100 miles away from me. Her home property, homeland, is there in that place where they're going to cross, they want to cross under the second time. And so it's like, it's just kind of this really neat connection. And the interesting thing about our house is that we use rainwater catchment off the roof, which after finding out about this pipeline project plan was like, oof, dodged a bullet on that one, because even if the water becomes contaminated, we're still getting our water from the sky. So that's kind of an upside for us. It makes me feel a little safer, although plastic is in all the water now, right? So who knows how that goes. But I really like this whole connection with where the water is really connected. And I love the story that was told about, you know, I stand in the shower the other day, my husband came in and he says, what do you need something? And I said, no, but I'm just talking to the water. I was just thanking the water, you know, because it's a living being. I mean, it's a part of creation, just like all of us. And I think as humans, we kind of forget how integral we are to nature. It's not that we are separated. We are the water. Our bodies are water. We're all made up of the same electrons, right? And so I like water because it just flows and interconnects and shows how everything is touched by the same things.
Beautiful. Well said. I'm sure it's, I'm just chit-chatting, but there's a book I'm reading called Deep...
Deep Ecology?
No.
Deep Adaptation.
No, but these are all good. Deep Waters, I think it's called. It's about deep water non-scuba divers.
Oh. You know, these, like, guys who hold their breath and go down?
Who hold their breath and go to like 300 feet or meters.
Wow, that's insane.
Crazy. And I've only gotten to the first chapter. My partner gave it to me. And I was just like reading it for fun on the plane and stuff like that. But there's a part of it where they describe the physiological changes that happen to a human body when they're underwater. And it's like, you know, if you're in scuba gear, you have to do all this kind of weird stuff to not get the bends.
Right, right.
Slow and all this
stuff. Yeah, right.
But those guys can dive like deeper than scuba divers mostly go and come back up because your body undergoes physiological changes when water
when
touches.
The pressure. Oh, it's just like, the water touch.
There's like all these studies of like people splashing water in their face. Like, this is why we splash water on our face, right?
It's not wow.
Because it just affects your face.
It's not just about cleaning, it's about the physiology.
Yeah. And so water is like this incredible, like, obviously it's a trigger evolutionarily. I mean, like we were, it's like there's like even pre ape evolution, so to speak. You know, there's
water is the source of all life,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. So there's got to be something that just like, you know, like is still resonant in your DNA, neural system, whatever, that just feels you.
Yeah.
Or even
a simpler
example is the womb, right?
Right. Which is, yeah, we're born in water.
Recently historical. Yeah. So there's all these little things that happen, like your heart rate slows, your lungs contract, so you don't need as much oxygen, you know, you become a fish.
Wow.
It's a real thing. Yeah.
That is super cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
You might be finding it. It's in my bag.
Interesting.
So,
love it.
That was a question about beginnings and why we're here where we are. And that was a great rolling answer. And then the question, of course, is, yeah, I asked it to you before, but like I'm trying to figure out for individuals, for this project, for somehow maybe even the day, or, you know, you're not going on the whole journey, but some of these people are actually like getting on a boat.
Right,
and
traveling.
Portland, which is like,
that's awesome.
The right kind of crazy, you know. Yeah. And so it's a question that could, yeah, go in any direction, but like, where do you think maybe, you know, this is going, this kind of thinking, this, what you're doing, it doesn't really matter, however you want to answer that.
Yeah, so I've really been, throughout this whole retirement, it's just, you know, it seems like I've been drawn into this activist lifestyle, which I've always kind of wanted to be an activist, and I've always had this bucket list, want to get arrested for activism, and but it's just really interesting to me to see the ups and downs. I mean, just on an hour-to-hour, minute-to-minute basis sometimes where it's like, oh, we're winning, we're going to defeat this thing, we're going to stop it, we're going to save the water. And then it's like, oh, they're winning. Look at all the advertising they're doing. Look at all the people who are, you know, putting radio pieces out there, or writing these crazy letters to the editors about all the jobs it's going to create. And I just think of how many people are going to be disillusioned by that. But I see this kind of bigger picture of different things happening. Like, I think there is, like we talked about that biological, physiological change of the body going into water. I think there is almost a physiological or psychological change is happening to people right now, where I'm seeing a lot of people moving back to their homelands, or moving in with, like we moved in with my mom when we moved to Minnesota because there are no jobs up here and the house wasn't finished either. So, but you know, it's just, I see this kind of return to home and people finding connection and community more, and people moving, not that masculine is bad, but dominator culture, heavily masculine driven, especially white male colonizer culture, I see it shifting now where we've realized this isn't working. This isn't making us happy. This isn't providing what humans need to feel good. Yeah, we can buy stuff and things, but feeling good and connected as humans is what really makes us feel alive, not a new car or a new iPhone. And we're seeing a lot of that stuff separating us. You know, watch the kids at the table, everyone's on their own iPhone. They could even be texting each other, you know, but they're not communicating as humans. And I see that changing now, where we are moving hopefully into this more feminine, care, interconnected, love-based, everybody needs to move forward together, not winner take all. And that is the thing that I try to hang on to that gives me hope. Like, maybe us humans can pull it off yet and not extinct ourselves, because it seems like what we're doing is tending toward extinction. I mean, what the IPCC report giving us 12 years came out almost a year ago now. And what has happened? You're seeing some movements around the world. You're starting to see the things that have been happening for a long time in places where me as a white American girl are kind of insulated from us American, in large part, if you don't live in Paradise, California or New Orleans or, you know, on the East Coast where, you know, the floods have come in. We really don't see the effects of climate change in such a visceral way unless, and I think that's the problem, is people aren't waking up until I've lost my home, I've lost my business, I've lost my child or my parent or my neighbor or my friend. And so I see that more and more of that happening is making us realize that the important thing is really place, land, water, people, community. And I think, you know, we've kind of been sold this bill of goods where corporations have taken over our food, our birth, our death, our medical care. All of these things that we used to have to do for ourselves have been corporatized, and so we no longer are really free to own our lives. You know, you have to bury yourself in this particular way. You have to have these particular vaccinations. You have to do all of these things, and it's partly population density that requires some of this. But I really feel like we need to be moving more towards local, sustainable, more loving, community-based. I really hope.
A nice way to answer it, because you sort of said you feel like it's happening, but you also hope it happens, which is really not, those are two great sentiments.
Yeah, know? I mean, I can see little pieces, you know, but it's like it's not enough of us yet. That's a part of it, is like, are enough of us going to wake up? I think a lot of us are just going to die in the collapse, you know, a lot. And I do think our population probably needs to really go down if we're going to make it. We don't have enough Earths to support the billions of people we have. But I think the hard thing for me is, as a privileged white person, I realize my chances for survival are a heck of a lot higher. And I've put myself, because of this knowledge I have, I've put myself into a house where my chances are greater at survival. But one of the things that keeps haunting me is, if that's what survival really is, do you still want to be here? Without the other people, without, what's the point?
Yeah, as my grandmother used to say, it's a weird way to make money. You know what I mean? Like when you're, it's strange. Yeah, it's a good point. Because I mean, even your catchment story, the fact that you know that and like that you're able to think that way about water and stuff may be the result of all your education. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we used to, when we've had like snowstorms in Indiana, when we still lived in Indiana, we would think, wow, we would be, we call our place the Harn, which is actually short for house barn, which beats the heck out of Shouse, I think, which sounds like a place you need toilet paper. But the whole design of it was, how do we live if there's nothing left? Like, if we are just in this house in the woods, and we used to talk all the time when the power would go out, and now you better not flush your toilet because your pump isn't going to work to fill it back up. You better not open your refrigerator. Up here, it's like, you know, we have water, we have heat. You know, we need electricity now and we use it, but we could survive without it if we had to. Mm. Those are the things that we think about, seeing the state of the world.
Yeah, reflect as well, yeah. So one last question before we just stay here all day and chat.
I know.
There is, you said already that you're not that familiar with the project and stuff like that, but I'm sure you've heard the word Anthropocene.
There's
even a movie, right? So it's really out there as a concept. And one of the things I'm really fascinated about is how it lands in different places as a locality, like this whole issue of it being kind of a globalizing concept. Like, the planet is changing. Well, the planet never changes at once, right? You have what you just
places.
Described.
Places. Yeah, yep. It gets worse in these places and better in these places.
Wake up to stuff. But this whole thing is framed around the idea of an Anthropocene river. And so it's an obvious question. What is an Anthropocene river to you? It doesn't have to be a technical answer. I guess as opposed to like a river. Or what that might mean. Or maybe just think about the Mississippi and how it, if it reflects that concept or not, you know?
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about this giving the river the rights of personhood, which I don't know that people have that many rights to begin with. That's a part of the question, I think. But I mean, I definitely can see this aspect of everything is a being, you know, whether it's that tree outside is a being. And trees are really big to me because we're surrounded in this, our land is partly swamp, which is great. There's a great connection to water. And we love that, you know, the fire barrier and the wildlife that it brings and all that. But it's like, it's still, that swamp is a being and it has its own little cycles, just like humans do. I think it's going to be interesting to see how we start realizing how we fit into nature and how nature is so much bigger than us. Like, I say that, like, again, we've talked earlier about the separation between, we humans are a part of nature. We are natural beings. But I guess I kind of see, like, realizing that, like, the inherent value of every being will kind of help us change the way we think about things. And you're starting to see that in kind of more formalized ways with rights of nature. But I think we can do that all personally. Like, I feel like I am a much calmer person than I was before, because I am so integral in life these days, being not in concrete world, whereas before I lived in concrete world. And you know, I really, it's funny, I don't really get, as much as I love this space, I don't really get here as much as I should. And I think that for a lot of us, life is, it's just all business, it's all busyness. And so we forget about how all the impacts that we have, and we're just doing things, but everything we do does affect. I don't know, it's a really interesting question to think about.
What an Anthropocene movie would be. I mean, everything you said.
What do you think?
I mean, the standard answer is something around the nature of, like, how there was it. This is why it's such a, you just did this thing with your hands, which is exactly the conflict I have, which is basically that you're constantly in the order of nature, which, of course, you know, puts you integral into it. But that's also a dangerous thing to think too much, because you are having so many effects that are not, like, you know, harmony-type arguments, where you're like, but what we're doing over here is just mining, like, the indigenous people have done for thousands of years. It's like, no, you have gigantic machines. Like, this is not, like, copper mining in Mexico.
This isn't human scale.
BC, right? And so there's this dangerousness of, like, integrative, sometimes what they call eco-pastoral thinking, you know, where you're kind of, oh, yeah, we're just doing what people have done for millions of years. And then the other side, which is that, look, no, we have to take responsibility, we're different, you know, and we have it, and we change things, and so now we have to do something about that.
Yeah, there is like this thought of, if we could just wipe off humans, and I will say, one of my friends, the Valve Turner, said, all males over 60, all white males over 60 or something, if we could just kill all of them, you know, because that's where it seems like a lot of the problems, that's an interesting concept, but in the same breath, he says, but yet there are people who get the interconnectedness of everything and get that we need to do restoration. We need to, and it's not even necessarily about restoration sometimes. It's just about being responsible for what we're doing now, being accountable. It's, you know, and I think a lot about Robin Wall Kimmerer in Braiding Sweetgrass, you know, where she talks about the indigenous ways of, you don't just take, which is what white colonizer mentality is we take the land from the people who lived here, we own it, we modify it, we change it and shape it to the way we think it needs to be. You know, one of the things that kills me up here is how many beavers are taken out of the environment by the local people because, well, the water's not flowing. They made the water not flow the way people want it to. Well, who says people are the most important part? Beavers are actually amazing engineers if you let them be, right? And they're amazing for the environment, for the holistic nature of the environment. But man has really made us as the primary, and so we've made the earth how we think it should be instead of allowing the earth to make us how we should be.
That's very good. Beautiful. Thank you very much.
Okay.